You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another new episode and a new week of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends and partners over at Vivid Seats. Download the Vivid Seats app or go to vividseats.com and enter the promo code LOCKEDON, and you can get $20 off your orders of $200 or more as a new customer. So as we chat late this Sunday, the Rockets are victorious again in the preseason, 108-93 winners today in San Antonio, improving their preseason mark to 2-1. They have two games left. The first Tuesday night, the home preseason finale against the Shanghai Sharks at Toyota Center, and then Friday at the Memphis Grizzlies wrapping it up. That's the last preseason game before the regular season. Things start for real next Wednesday at home against the New Orleans Pelicans. Now on today's show, we're going to be breaking down everything that happened in Sunday's 108-93 win, which really, there were a lot more positives than negatives in my opinion. Clearly the Rockets won the game by 15 points on the road against a quality team in San Antonio. PJ Tucker made his preseason debut after missing the first two games with back soreness, and PJ actually led the team in scoring with 19 points. Carmelo Anthony took over down the stretch, had 12 points, all of those in the second half of the game. Clint Capela returned after missing a game with foot soreness. He had 10 points. James Ennis had 10 points. James Harden had 18. Chris Paul had 11. So a lot of positives. The Rockets did have some injury absences. Michael Carter-Williams out with knee soreness. Both backup centers, Marquese Chris and Isaiah Hartenstein, out with tweaked ankles. And then during the game, both Clint Capela and Eric Gordon left early. None of those injuries seems especially serious. A lot of those, I think, the players would have been playing if the games were meaningful. Nonetheless, they did happen, and it's something to monitor moving forward. So we are going to talk about those as we move our way through our usual 3 points recap on today's show. To lead off, though, I'm going to discuss the Carmelo Anthony factor, because it's not just the stat line, which 12 points, 6 rebounds, 5 of 11 from the field in his 29 minutes that was telling. By the way, the Rockets, you could see who Mike D'Antoni trusts, the minute totals. PJ Tucker played 34, which I think was important for him to start getting his way back into conditioning, back into game shape after not playing the first week of the preseason. Chris Paul and James Harden each played 33. Carmelo Anthony came off the bench for the first time. He played 29. James Ennis played 27. Clint Capela played 22, and he was on his way to playing more than that before leaving early with the bruised hand. So the Rockets clearly took this game seriously, and that included Carmelo Anthony, again, coming off the bench for the first time alongside Eric Gordon. Maybe this is a lean that they're leaning to starting starting James Ennis over Eric Gordon, because the rationale the first week had been that, well, Gordon was coming off the bench because Carmelo had to start, and the Rockets wanted to see what would happen, or they wouldn't want to go into a game without at least one of those off the bench as your scoring punch, if you will. Well, now with Carmelo off the bench, Eric Gordon stayed on the bench, so maybe that's a bit of a tell that they're leaning to James Ennis being a starter. I don't know. It is just one game. It could be that in the days ahead, they flip it the other direction, although that might be less likely with Eric Gordon having a bit of foot soreness. We'll talk about that in the second segment. But to get back to the main point, which to me is Carmelo Anthony, he didn't lead the team in scoring, but what's most noteworthy to me is how he took over the game down the stretch. Again, scoreless at the half, finishes with 12-6, shot 5 of 6 from the field in the second half after going 0 of 6 in the first half, 0 of 4 from 3 in the first half, then made both of his threes, each assisted by Gary Clark. By the way, it continues to be obvious that amongst Houston's end-of-the-bench options, it's Gary Clark, the undrafted forward from Cincinnati, who continues to get the most rave reviews from the coaching staff and clearly has earned the most trust from Mike D'Antoni. Would not surprise me at all if maybe by the latter part of this season, but certainly by next season, if the Rockets view him as a capable 3-and-D rotation player. They really like what they have seen out of the undrafted forward out of Cincinnati. Again, assisting, on both of Carmelo Anthony's made threes in the fourth quarter. And the Spurs led in the fourth quarter by as much as 4 points, and the Rockets ended up winning by 15, which tells you they flipped it in a big way. Rockets ended up winning the quarter 34-21. But the reason I was so enthused about what happened with Carmelo in the fourth quarter is that it gave us our first chance to see how he responded to adversity. Now, it was also his first chance, as we mentioned, to seeing him come off the bench, but I think we all knew that that was something he was open to because he wouldn't have signed in Houston if he weren't. But this was the first time that things weren't going well. The first two games, he shot the ball so well, 7 of 12 from 3, almost 60%. So yeah, it's easy to feel good when the ball is going in the bucket. But he started the game cold. Also, the Carmelo at the 5 lineups, at least initially, they didn't fare as well defensively. Now, I don't think all of that was on Carmelo Anthony. Part of it, there was no Michael Carter-Williams, so that meant less length on the perimeter to kind of offset the lack of Clint Capella at the 5. When they went on that 21-2 run against the Pacers, in which Carmelo Anthony was at the 5, they had Michael Carter-Williams out there, and his length was very disruptive. So I think if you're going to play Carmelo at the 5, it does help to have MCW out there to provide a little bit more length on the perimeter so that you can recover if anyone gets beaten in a one-on-one situation. I also think the Rockets had some careless turnovers. James Harden had 7, Chris Paul had 4. As I've mentioned before, that's not something I'm really tracking with your superstars in the preseason. So while the Carmelo Anthony at the 5 lineup did not have great results defensively, at the same time, I think some of it was exaggerated based on circumstances. The turnovers, the lack of Michael Carter-Williams. And also, you have to tip your hat to the Spurs. As long as they're coached by Greg Popovich, their passing is always going to be more crisp than most NBA teams, so they're able to take advantage of you when you don't have a rim protector in a way that other teams, even a quality squad like Victor Oladipo and the Indiana Pacers, are not. All that said, even though there were some circumstances, the bottom line was Carmelo Anthony was not shooting well, and the team was not defending well when he was on the court. And it would have been very easy for him to sort of tuck his tail between his legs and say, "This isn't my night." He did not do that. He kept shooting, he made both of his threes, and then better than that, he also hit a couple of contested jumpers, one on the low block, another from mid-range, and I know you're going to say, "Ben, isn't this supposed to be threes and layups in Houston? Why are you having Carmelo Anthony, you know, does that bode well?" Well, that he's taking these mid-range, these post-isolation shots, and generally speaking, it doesn't, but on occasion, especially if you're playing a quality defensive team like the Spurs are, very disciplined, you do need one-on-one play late in the shot clock. It wasn't like Carmelo just quickly went to those shots. Both of them came late in the shot clock, and effectively it felt a little bit like the playoff run 2 years ago. Now, I know the Rockets didn't have Chris Paul back then, but we saw the way things did get sticky against the Spurs, and it started to at over a point in the second half. The Rockets started very hot, and then eventually kind of ground to a halt. But Carmelo unlocked them with one-on-one isolation play late in the clock. And so while it's not something the Rockets want to see that regularly, at the same time, it's nice that Carmelo is a historically great isolation player. And so even if he's not to that level anymore, he is 34 years old, it's nice to know that he still has that in his bag of tricks if the Rockets need it. But the bigger takeaway is he kept shooting. And again, the guy who started 0 of 6 finished 5 of 6, including 10 of his points in the fourth quarter as the Rockets broke open, again, what was a 4-point San Antonio lead early in the period, ended up winning by 15. And the biggest takeaway I had the entire time, I sat there watching Carmelo Anthony execute, turn his game around in the middle, and I couldn't help but think, and I put this on Twitter, at Ben Dubose, what would have happened if this were Ryan Anderson in Carmelo Anthony's shoes? And I think we all know, if Ryan Anderson started the game 0 of 6 in the first half a year ago, he would have stopped shooting. He would have gotten tentative. And that kills the flow of Mike D'Antoni's offense. To a lesser extent, Gerald Green also fits in this criteria. He actually started very cold in the first half, but he ended up, in his return, he missed Thursday's game with a tooth extraction. He ended up having 13 points, 4 of 7 from the field, 3 of 6 from 3, because he kept shooting. But that's so important to the flow of this Mike D'Antoni scheme. And there were a couple of smart-ass responses I got on Twitter of saying, "Yeah, because if Carmelo Anthony is not making his shots, you want him to keep shooting." Actually, you do. That's what makes the Rockets great. That's what makes them a 65-win juggernaut. That's what makes this offense work. You don't have the hesitation that you have in so many other schemes. The Rockets truly embrace the Moneyball revolution, analytics, whatever you want to call it. They are all in, and that's what's helped them become one of the most elite offensive teams in the history of the game. There are definitely fair questions that are not going to be answered by preseason basketball games about just how real Carmelo Anthony is, just how much does he have left in his tank in terms of stardom. We'll have to wait and see when defenses turn it up. Certainly at 34 years old, he's not the athlete he once was. He's come off the bench one time, and that's in a preseason game. All of those questions are fair, and they're not really going to get answered until we have real basketball games starting again in 10 days. The Rockets open the season next Wednesday against the Pelicans. But as I've said all offseason, I don't think the Rockets are looking for Carmelo Anthony to be a star. I also don't think they're looking at him to replace Trevor Ariza or Luke Bamute. I think they are looking at him at a bare minimum to be an upgrade over Ryan Anderson in terms of similar catch-and-shoot dynamics, spacing the floor, but more playmaking, more confidence, and that's exactly what he has shown you thus far. Maybe Carmelo Anthony can give you a lot more than that, but at a bare minimum, I love what I'm seeing from him mentally, that even when things aren't going well, he kept shooting, he turned it around in the middle of the game, and for that matter, so did the Rockets. But to get back to what I was saying, I got a couple of smart-ass responses about should he keep doing that even if he's missing the shots, because on paper, that doesn't seem like the smartest play. And I'm sure for some, it's going to invoke memories of the 0-for-27 stretch in Game 7 against the Golden State Warriors. Well, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, there was nothing about that strategy that was particularly flawed. Now, by the way, the 0-for-27, Harden actually made a three in the middle of it that was inexplicably waved off by just an incompetent officiating decision, but let's not go down that road because we could be here for hours discussing the ridiculous officiating in Game 6 and Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. Bigger picture, the strategy wasn't flawed. If you're competing with the Golden State Warriors, and that's what the Rockets are doing, you are not in this era going to be more talented than them. You're just not. They had four All-Star level players, and now they added Boogie Cousins. They have two MVP quality players. To some degree, to keep up with them, you're going to have to increase the variance. Defensively, that means you need to muck it up, which the Rockets did last year. They slowed the pace. They got it into that half-court sets where you could see it made the Warriors uncomfortable with their movements, both with the ball and the players. And offensively, you need to take threes and hope that over certain stretches, you're going to make enough threes that it increases the variance to where it's your night, and hopefully 4 times out of 7, it can work out. It almost did a year ago, if not for Chris Paul's hamstring injury. And after Chris Paul went out, folks, I don't know how the Rockets were supposed to beat the Warriors if they don't take threes. The Warriors have four All-Star players, including two MVPs, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant. They've also got Klay Thompson, all of those guys bombing from deep. How exactly do you think the Rockets are going to outscore them over 48 minutes if you're just attacking the rim and taking mid-range shots because the threes aren't falling? No, you've got to keep taking threes and hope that eventually enough go in to make you viable, because otherwise you're just not as talented. So that's why, yes, if it's a pickup game, then yeah, it might seem a little questionable to keep shooting threes even if they're not going in, especially if, say, you have an athletic advantage and you can get to the rim. Well, for where the Rockets are trying to go, everything is in the context of the Golden State Warriors. You have got to keep shooting. Yes, these are efficient shots, but beyond just their superior efficiency, the modern NBA analytics revolution, they're also just necessary if you're going to compete with the Golden State Warriors. You have got to keep bombing. That's what Mike D'Antoni wants them to do. It's the principles of his scheme, and that scheme is more essential than ever given how loaded, how stacked the deck is in favor of the Golden State Warriors. So that's why, yeah, it's nice that Carmelo Anthony can make a couple isolation shots, which he did against the Spurs to unlock a tight defense, even if it's in the post, even if it's in the mid-range game. But the threes, yeah, even if he starts 0-4, whatever it may be, he and the team, they've got to keep taking them. Ryan Anderson didn't. That's why the Rockets wanted to move on from him. Carmelo Anthony will, and at a bare minimum, it's an upgrade relative to Ryan. It could be more than that, but again, one step at a time. It's the preseason. The big picture questions aren't all going to be answered now, but so far, so good. I do like what I'm seeing from him, at least in terms of his root role of replacing Ryan Anderson. Hopefully he can be more than that, but for that to be the case, stay tuned. Now, we'll expand our focus beyond Carmelo in just a few moments, but for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at Vivid Seats, because without their support, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. And folks, if you want to attend any of the upcoming Rockets game, be it Tuesday's preseason finale, which you can get some really great tickets for cheap because it's the preseason, or regular season or eventual postseason games, they've got you covered. And really, they even go beyond sports. If you want to go to concerts, shows, whatever it may be, Vivid Seats has it all. They've got a great inventory, and they make it so easy for you to attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice, all at a great price. That's because they're the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. And the best part, they make the buying process remarkably easy. You can sort by price or even look for seats in the specific section and row of your choice. And to make things even better and save even more money, Vivid Seats is giving our Locked On Rockets listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more. To take advantage of that, go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app, or go to vividseats.com. And then use the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off your orders of $200 or more as a new customer. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. So from the biggest concerts and games all the way down to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats, they've got it all. So folks, if you could support our sponsors, download the app and enter the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off your orders of $200 or more as a new customer. Now, jumping back into the program, I wanted to lead off primarily discussing Carmelo Anthony because even though he wasn't necessarily the player of the game, I thought that he was the most important because, again, preseason basketball is preseason basketball. Not everyone is dialed in, although it's important to note the Spurs treated this game relatively seriously as well. DeMar DeRozan played 33 minutes. He had 22 points. LaMarcus Aldridge played 27 minutes. Rudy Gay played 25 minutes. So it wasn't like Greg Popovich was out there running backups. He had his bigger guns out there as well. So there is justification for why the Rockets played a relatively short rotation, shorter because, again, Michael Carter-Williams, Marquise Chriss, Isaiah Hartenstein, all unavailable with various minor injuries going into the game. And because it's preseason basketball, beyond the Carmelo Anthony stuff, which, again, because so much of it is mental, even if physically the players aren't up to snuff, so to speak, or the schemes, I should say, then you can always tell a little bit about mentality, what players are buying in, and so I do think there's something to be told there. Beyond that, though, I think the bigger story is health. And the good news, P.J. Tucker, after missing a couple of games last week with back soreness, he came back, played a game-high 34 minutes, as we mentioned, 19 points, 7 rebounds, 7 of 15 from the field, 3 of 8 from 3. I thought he moved very crisp. He played well defensively. You can see a big difference in the Rockets' defensive performance, by the way, with Tucker and Clint Capella out there. Tucker with 19 points in his 19-7 in 34 minutes. Clint Capella in 22 minutes, 10-6. And when both of those guys were out there, which is the case in the first half, boy, the Rockets, even though they shot just 5 of 24 from 3 in the first half, they still led the game at the break because they held the Spurs to 41 points. When you consider that the Rockets have given up 110-plus in each of their first two games in the preseason, it was a big defensive turnaround, and that's not surprising because you get P.J. Tucker and Clint Capella back. Those are your two most important defensive players. So they went around, they moved well, at least in terms of their prior injuries, more on Clint Capella in a moment. But with P.J. in particular, there's always a little bit of a worry because with back soreness, he has had back surgery before. He came back remarkably quick, but when you have a guy that's previously had back surgery and now you have some back soreness, it's kind of like the Dwight Howard thing. You always have to keep a wary eye on it, but so far, so good. It's one game, but I like what I saw from P.J. He made his shots, not just from three, but he actually was 4 of 7 from inside the arc, had a nice teardrop game near the rim. I thought he moved well defensively. He said Friday on The Jump, the Rockets interviews, if you haven't heard those, there's some really good stuff with Daryl Morey, Tillman Fertitta, Mike D'Antoni, Chris Paul, and P.J. Tucker. You can search those on YouTube, aired on ESPN's NBA The Jump show, hosted by Rachel Nichols Friday afternoon at Toyota Center. I know a lot of us, myself included, missed it because it came at the same time as the Astros game. Those are on game on YouTube. But again, Tucker said then he was fine. It was precautionary, and I think he showed it on the floor Sunday. Capella, he was out with a foot injury, which is something you always worry about with a big man who has to run up and down the floor in a scheme like the Rockets. And of course, Capella might be the most indispensable player. He was plus 19 in his 22 minutes, which is a staggering figure, and it shows how valuable he is defensively. He left with a bruised hand. D'Antoni actually said after the game that he was a little worried about it, but they x-rayed it. And again, when you're worried about a fracture, you don't have to go through an MRI. The x-ray will tell the tale. So in terms of is anything broken, I think the Rockets are accurate in saying that it's just a bruise, and I think they dodged it. Eric Gordon, we'll have to see what happened. He seemed to slip on the floor. They're calling it a jammed foot after the game. He waved off Keith Jones initially when he went on the floor to check on him, but Gordon left the game late in the third quarter, didn't return. So it's nice to see Capella and Tucker return from their previous injuries. Now there's the matter of a bruised hand for Clint Capella, but it does seem like they dodged the worst with that. And again, with MRIs versus x-rays, you worry about an MRI if there's some sort of ligament issue, if you're trying to see the muscular dynamic. In terms of bones, which is what I think they're worried about when they say a bruised hand, an x-ray can tell the tale. So yes, I believe that the Rockets did dodge a bullet with Clint Capella. He's going to be just fine. With Eric Gordon, it didn't look like anything particularly alarming. You know, when there's a foot or ankle injury of significance, many times it happens when a player steps awkwardly and lands on another foot. It wasn't anything like that, really. It just looked like he slipped on a wet spot on the floor, but I didn't see any awkward torque or bend. So I think he's going to be fine. But it's important to note that the Tuesday game is against the Shanghai Sharks, not an NBA team. So this is the game I would expect the Rockets to be a little more conservative in regards to their injured players. Because you only have four games against NBA opponents, and the Rockets do have some new pieces they're trying to work in. That's why I think they have erred on the side of getting those guys out there for the conditioning benefits, but also for the continuity benefits, getting these guys used to their rotations and playing together. Tuesday against the Shanghai Sharks, while it's not unimportant, at the same time, it's not like you're playing NBA-level competition. So that's why I do think the guys that are legitimately hurt, even if it's minor, I do think you'll see Mike D'Antoni be a little more garbage time in terms of his lineups. Not saying they'll sit everyone, but my guess is you see Chris Paul, James Harden more in the 20 to 25 minute range as opposed to the 30 to 35 minute range in this one. And anyone like Capella, Gordon that's dealing with anything, I'd be a little surprised if they're out there Tuesday. My guess is they view Friday against Memphis, an NBA opponent, as the real final tune-up. And the Rockets are aware last year that in that last week, that's when Chris Paul bruised his knee and ended up being out a month of the regular season. So I do think they'll err on the side of caution. They didn't today. But again, I think the Rockets viewed this as a good test because the Spurs are a quality defensive team. They've got some star power with DeMar DeRozan. I think they wanted to see how they stacked up. But I do think Tuesday at home against the Shanghai Sharks, because of the nature of the opponent, and also Capella and Gordon are important pieces, I do think you'll see them be a little more proactive in terms of managing these injuries moving forward. Another guy I'm going to be watching very closely is Michael Carter-Williams. We don't know much about the knee soreness that caused him to miss Sunday's game. Mike D'Antoni characterized it as minor. But I do think in the first half of the game, I mentioned the Rockets just up 46-41 at the break. They shot 5 of 24 from 3, and it was notable that without Michael Carter-Williams in the bench, the Rockets didn't have easier buckets. So when the threes weren't falling, they didn't have those points in transition or in the half-court set where Carter-Williams just takes a hard cut to the rim or leaks out and is able to get you the easy points. And I do think they missed him. They also missed his length defensively, I thought, as well. I mentioned the Carmelo Anthony at the five stretch not really faring as well as it did against Indiana. So I thought the Rockets, even though it's two games in, I think they did feel the absence of Michael Carter-Williams, and they need him because he is important to unlocking easier buckets. Now, maybe in the regular season, if you have Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon attacking the rim a little bit more, that's something that, because they don't want to take contact or risk any sort of soft tissue injury from exerting themselves too hard, I don't think they've really done in the preseason. And again, that's in the turnover totals. James Harden with 7, Chris Paul with 4. They're not really exploding to the rim. It's the regular season, maybe if the threes aren't falling, you see them attack the rim a little more. And if that's the case, maybe not having Michael Carter-Williams isn't quite as important as it felt on Sunday in San Antonio. But at least to some degree, even with just the bench units, think back to Corey Brewer, who for all of his struggles as a shooter, he did benefit the Rockets at times, especially over the 82-game grind, because of his ability to get out and transition. That's something, and get the Rockets easy points, that's something that we've seen early in the preseason from Michael Carter-Williams, and that's a dynamic. It's a little thing, and it's probably less of a thing in the regular season, because you have James Harden, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon more dialed in, but it is something to watch, because if he's out, you did see a little bit of a decline in terms of just how easy the Rockets could get to the cup. Now, you have to give credit to the Spurs, a very good defensive team on that end as well. You have to tip your hat to Greg Popovich, but I do think the Rockets miss Michael Carter-Williams. Hopefully, you get him back, because there's just little things, not a huge difference, but there are little things he brings you on both ends of the floor that, in my opinion, are very important. And then as far as the final two injuries, Marquese Chriss and Isaiah Hartenstein, neither suiting up with ankle tweaks. It goes without saying that those injuries are important because you're still trying to find out who your backup center is, at least on paper, after Clint Capella. Now, I know there's still Carmelo Anthony at the five lineups, but I think they'd like to at least have a sense for who the second center is if they need to go bigger. And right now, I don't think that's decided. Hopefully, one of those guys is ready to go Tuesday, because if they sit Capella out, as I suspect, with that bruised hand, then in theory, it's an opportunity for one or both those guys to play extended minutes. Just have to hope that they're physically capable of doing that, and then we can get some more data points to evaluate them. Now, as we close out the program, just a few minor notes I want to throw out there. One thing I can't believe I haven't mentioned yet, the Rockets had 27 assists in this game against a San Antonio Greg Popovich defense. To put that in perspective, 27 assists a year ago would have been the second highest total in the entire NBA, trailing only the Golden State Warriors. The Rockets were actually third lowest in the league, 28th, with about 21 assists per game on average, and of course that's because the Rockets have a lot of isolation possessions based on teams switching so much against them, and then of course the success of both Chris Paul and James Harden individually at breaking down defenders off the dribble. They're both two of the best in the history of the game at that. And I don't think the Rockets are going to be dramatically different this season. Now, both Paul and Harden had 9 assists apiece. That's 18 of the Rockets, 27 right there. Maybe they're a tad bit more passive because, A, it's the preseason, mentioned not really wanting to explode that much, and also neither of their shots were falling. Actually posted identical 4 of 13 shot lines from the field, 2 of 9 from behind the arc. Harden did get to the line 8 times, making all of those, and that's how he ended up with 18 points, which only trailed P.J. Tucker amongst the leading scorers for the Rockets. By the way, the Rockets had 6 players in double figures this game. And when the Rockets had that level of balance a year ago, they were 21-2. Again, the 6 players in double figures a year ago, even by their standards, that winning percentage is dominant. Now again, some of this is exaggerated based on preseason basketball. But I think some of it also traces to the Carmelo Anthony at the 5 lineup. Because look, even though it's the preseason, this is the San Antonio Spurs, this is Greg Popovich, this is a very disciplined bunch that has given the Rockets fits for years. You could even look at previous Rockets Spurs preseason games, and they've tended to be ugly. This wasn't. Other than the second quarter, the Rockets had 31 points in the first, 28 in the third, and 34 in the fourth, and the ball moved side to side very, very well. And I actually think we've seen teams in the Spurs at the top of the list give the Rockets problems. Whenever the Rockets do grind to a halt, it's generally because you have that big who's able to sag back and basically have the combination of length and discipline to take away the driving lane for the guard, i.e. it forces James Harden into a mid-range teardrop rather than getting to the cup, but also the discipline not to commit early and also prevent the lob to Clint Capella or whoever the big is. And that's when the Rockets get a little sticky. And it's not that that's ever going to go totally away. The Spurs are very well coached defensively, and as I mentioned, a couple of Carmelo Anthony's buckets in isolation in the fourth quarter came late in the shot clock when the Rockets couldn't get anything going, and I do think those were good signs just to see the Rockets have that in their toolbox, if they will. That's a skill set I don't know if they had, certainly not 2 years ago when the Rockets and Spurs met in the playoffs, and I don't even know a year ago if they had that, at least not at that particular position. But where I think Carmelo Anthony at the five is a really interesting wrinkle is in terms of how he spaces the floor. In effect, the Rockets are giving up the traditional game in which you have Capella providing the vertical spacing, trying to make those runs to the rim, or Montrezl Harrell a couple of years ago when he was kind of the 2A, 2B, along with Nene, or in this case now a 36-year-old Nene who wants touches on the low block near the bucket. I think this goes back to our earlier discussion about Carmelo Anthony versus Ryan Anderson. I think the Rockets wanted Ryan Anderson to fill this role. If you remember when Nene went down in the playoff series 2 years ago, the Rockets put in Ryan Anderson as their de facto backup center, and I think this is how they thought on paper it would work out, and there were glimpses where it was okay. Now, by the way, one other thing about Carmelo Anthony, as you mentioned, defensively, he's stronger, in my opinion, in his upper body than Ryan Anderson was. We saw some situations where there were switches, and Carmelo Anthony ended up on the low block against a LaMarcus Aldridge type, and he actually held up reasonably well, whereas with Ryan Anderson, I don't think the upper body strength was necessarily as strong as Carmelo Anthony, so that's an upgrade in and of itself. But it's the offensive end where it's more interesting to me, and I think, again, you go back to that Carmelo-Ryan Anderson comparison. With Ryan, because of the tentativeness, because of the inconsistencies, I don't think they ever had enough offensively to where they felt it was worth the trade-off, to where they could try that for an extended stretch. Well, now, with Carmelo continuing to shoot and hopefully continuing to execute and make them at a high level, as he has largely through 3 games of the preseason, or at least 2.5 of them, what this does is give the Rockets another way that you can attack that type of defense. I don't think they had that in their bag of tricks a year ago. They do now, and I think that's very important. Now, the Spurs, after losing Kawhi Leonard, I don't view them as a threat anymore. Maybe they make the Western Conference as a lower-tier playoff team, but grand scheme, I don't see the Rockets being challenged by San Antonio. However, there are other teams in the league that can conceivably give you that same dynamic, especially if the Rockets, for example, get past the Warriors this year. Then I look at Toronto and Boston in the East with Al Horford as two teams with the type of defensive discipline and versatile bigs that could try to do some of those same types of things. Maybe this is the answer. Maybe this is the way, and of course you could even point to, even though the Rockets largely had success against them, the Utah Jazz with Rudy Gobert. If they're healthier this year with Ricky Rubio, who knows? Maybe they're a tougher out in the playoffs. But this is the type of team a year ago, I think the Rockets, they would have tried their more traditional lineups because they didn't necessarily trust the Ryan Anderson at the five to hold up on a consistent basis. Well, since they can trust Carmelo to keep shooting, I think it's easier to keep him out there in those stretches. And then because of that, because he's able to consistently be an option from three, it opens up more driving and kicking opportunities. look, the Spurs are so disciplined that you may not be able to get your traditional lobs, your rim runners, going with that high pick and roll the way the Rockets would like to. But if you just keep throwing Capella and Nene, those types out there, there's not much else you could do because, well, you're not going to be able to space the floor because you don't have to respect either of those two guys from anywhere beyond, you know, at most about 15 feet. With Carmelo, because you have to respect him all the way out to 25-plus feet, then the Rockets, to some degree, can abandon that high pick-and-roll game. Now, not totally, but instead of the rim runners, you're trying to get threes out of it. You have guys, basically whoever the screener is, often popping back out for the three. But in effect, it makes the D, it muddies the traditional defensive math for the Rockets, or for the Spurs, if you will. It changes the calculus. It gives them more to think about, and it's a different way the Rockets can attack. It makes them less predictable, is what I keep coming back to. I keep going back to the cliche, but it's something that they didn't have in their toolbox a year ago. It helps them be more diverse in their attack, and against quality defensive teams, that's important. Now, as we close out the podcast, we want to acknowledge again, it's the preseason. The Spurs and everyone are going to be playing harder in the regular season, so it's not like this is an apples-to-apples comparison. No, it's apples to oranges, just because you execute it on Sunday. Again, the Rockets' 27 assists, including 16 made threes on many of those assists, just going to move the ball well against that Spurs defense in a way they didn't in prior years. It doesn't mean it's necessarily going to translate to the regular season when defenders really gear up and ramp up their intensity. What I do think it shows you is at least the possibility, because again, it starts with the mentality, and to have Carmelo Anthony able to go out there and do what Ryan Anderson could not, it gives you that option. It gives you that potential. It doesn't mean that it's automatically going to work. It doesn't mean that it's going to translate, but you could see a path to where it could. And for me, when I look at preseason basketball, that's what I'm hoping for. I'm not expecting to have any takeaways and celebrate saying, wow, these Rockets are great, because even if they win every game by 20-plus points, what does it really matter? These guys aren't locked in. What you're looking for are signs, especially in terms of mental awareness, the players' innate desires, the tendencies of a coaching staff, and we're seeing signs, especially from this Carmelo Anthony experiment, to some degree it is, that there's potential there to unlock that even the 2017-2018 Rockets did not have. And again, that was a 65-win group that, if not for an ill-timed Chris Paul hamstring injury, probably would have won the NBA title. So as far as preseason goes, assuming the injuries are minor, and at this point I think they are, then I'm pretty excited by what I've seen. If anything, I'm more optimistic than I was a couple of weeks ago after seeing it start to come together on the floor. And y'all know that's a pretty big statement for me because I've been a lot more optimistic than the national media on this Rockets team through the entire offseason. Again, just three preseason games, so we're very, very early in the analysis. But I really, really like what we're seeing, especially from the new pieces, the variables, if you will. Lots of quality signs. And again, a lot of those we saw late in the Rockets 108-93 win Sunday over the Spurs, which improves them to 2-1 on the preseason, back in action Tuesday night against the Shanghai Sharks at Toyota Center. So until then, this is where we'll leave you. As always, I appreciate you guys very much for tuning in. If you want more content in the interim, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook account at facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Website, lockedonrockets.com. Always you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, suggestions for the show, or make inquiries about how to become a potential sponsor of the program, just as our friends at Vivid Seats were today. Remember, download the Vivid Seats app or go to vividseats.com, enter the promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off your orders of $200 or more, and you can reap that reward just by using the promo code LOCKEDON as a new customer at Vivid Seats. So for now, I will sign off because the Texans and Cowboys, it's a big game in Houston football circles with everyone in the AFC South losing. The Texans win this game. All of a sudden, they're right back in the AFC South picture, just one game back. So lots of excitement there. Also, the Astros have a chance to go for the sweep against the Indians and the ALDS tomorrow. So lots to look forward to on those fronts as well. If you want more coverage of the Texans game, I strongly encourage you to check out my friends over at Locked On Texans. That show hosted by Robert Lane and Brian Patterson. Win or lose, they'll have full reaction from NRG Stadium later tonight. So check those out. Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Megaphone, wherever you listen to Locked On Rockets, you can probably find Locked On Texans as well, because we have a great network of shows across the various sports here at the Locked On Podcast, your home for daily coverage of these many teams across the United States, and sometimes even beyond. We've also got college football cover, that means Texas A&M. They had a big win in College Station last night over Kentucky, big win over a ranked opponent. Aggies back in the polls, so if you want coverage, check out Locked On Aggies. That's a new addition to our network, hosted by my friend Taylor Travis. Anyway, that'll do it for today. Go Texans, go Astros, and I hope to see many of you around at Toyota Center Tuesday night when the Rockets are back in action against the Shanghai Sharks. For now, enjoy the start to your week, and stay tuned for more coverage here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on Houston Rockets basketball.